Hi there, listener. Before we dive in, I want you to know that this podcast is AI generated. It's crafted from the topics and principles shared in the Bye Bye Panic Anxiety Recovery Program. And while AI helps bring this content to life, the recovery tools and insights remain rooted in the principles that have helped so many people overcome their symptoms for good. Enjoy the episode.
Okay, let's unpack this. Have you ever felt like your own body was just turning against you?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's a heart that races for, you know, no clear reason, or that really strange kind of disconnected feeling.
Yeah, where the world seems a bit distant.
Exactly. Or maybe even sudden nausea that just, ugh, won't quit. It's such an isolating feeling, isn't it?
It really is.
So today, we're doing a deep dive into the material you shared with us. It's all focused on really getting what's happening when anxiety takes hold.
Moving beyond just the surface stuff.
Right. Beyond the symptoms into, well, what sounds like a pretty profound shift in how we see it. Our mission here is to cut through some of the confusion, maybe offer a clear path towards hope.
Yeah, breaking down these sometimes complex ideas into steps that actually feel doable, actionable.
Exactly, actionable steps. So the material you sent, it describes this feeling so vividly. It's not just the racing thoughts, which are bad enough, but that really unsettling sensation that your body is like attacking itself.
That's a phrase that resonates with a lot of people, I think. That internal battle.
Yeah. You might know this. Maybe waking up feeling intensely nauseous. Or bam, a panic attack right after eating, even if you felt fine literally moments before.
It can feel so random and scary.
Totally. And then there's the endless searching for answers, right? Constantly looking online, trying to figure out why this is happening.
Mm-hmm, the why question.
But sometimes that search just makes the spiral, you know, deeper. You end up feeling even more terrified and lost.
Right, because the search itself can become a source of anxiety.
For you listening, maybe these symptoms show up differently, like sudden chest tightness or that weird, floaty, disconnected feeling.
Depersonalization or derealization, yeah.
That makes reality feel kind of unreal. Or just waves of dread that wash over you for no obvious reason.
It's so varied.
And like so many people caught in this, you're probably thinking, if I could just get rid of this one symptom, maybe the nausea or the dizziness, then everything would be okay.
That desire for relief is so powerful and completely understandable.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's just you desperately want something to stop.
And what's really fascinating looking at this material is how universal these core experiences are, even if the specific symptoms are, you know, all over the place from person to person.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of us get trapped in what feels like this constant fear and relief cycle. We feel fear or discomfort.
Yeah.
And we immediately, instinctively look for ways to calm down, to escape it, right?
Yeah, anything to make it stop.
And when the feeling maybe eases off for a bit, we think, okay, that worked, that breathing technique or avoiding that situation. We naturally assume that was the fix.
Makes sense. Cause and effect.
It does make sense on the surface. But here's the tricky part. That perfectly natural human reaction, while totally understandable in the moment, can often kind of inadvertently reinforce the very anxiety we're trying so hard to escape.
So trying to escape makes it stick around.
In a way, yes. Those traditional relief methods, when they're used purely as an escape hatch from a symptom, can actually send this unhelpful message to our nervous system.
What kind of message?
It basically tells your system, yep, this feeling is dangerous. Something is very wrong here.
Oh, okay. So you're confirming the alarm.
Exactly. You're validating the initial fear signal. And at the heart of this, what your material really highlights is what it calls a fear and proof cycle.
Fear and proof.
It's a really core insight. Simple, but powerful. When you feel a sensation or discomfort or fear, and then you react to that fear, maybe by trying to escape it, fight it, calm it down urgently.
Yeah.
Your nervous system interprets that very reaction as proof that the initial fear signal was totally valid.
Wow. Okay. So the reaction is the proof.
It reinforces the idea that, yes, there really is something dangerous happening inside you that needs an urgent response.
Oh, I see.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, like the material suggests, every single time you try to escape a symptom, whether it's through, say, controlled breathing just to stop the feeling, or checking your pulse again and again.
Or avoiding places,
exactly, or using other quick relief methods as an escape, you're basically sending a direct message to your body.
And that message is?
It's essentially danger. Something genuinely bad is happening right now, and we are not safe until this feeling goes away completely.
Okay, so understanding that.
Yeah.
What does that actually mean for us day to day? It sounds like our efforts to feel better, which are completely well-intentioned.
Absolutely well-intentioned.
Those strategies to find immediate relief might actually be sort of subtly teaching our brains to be more scared of our own feelings, our own physical sensations.
That's the counterintuitive part, isn't it? But yes, that seems to be the mechanism at play.
It really makes you stop and think. The material uses a kind of analogy, doesn't it? Like if you saw a totally harmless spider and you reacted by screaming your head off and jumping away, your brain would logically think, wow, that spider must be absolutely terrifying if we react to that extremely.
Precisely. The scream and the escape become the proof of the danger, even if, objectively, there was no real threat there.
So it's not about blame at all. Nobody's doing this on purpose.
Not at all. It's about understanding this deeper, often completely missed pattern in how our nervous system actually learns and operates. It's just trying to keep us safe based on the information it gets.
And the information it gets is our reaction.
Exactly. Our behavior.
Okay, this leads into a really fascinating part of the material, talking about the brain itself. It mentions the amygdala.
Yes, the amygdala. Tiny part of the brain, but plays a huge role in this.
Right. It acts like our brain's ancient threat detector, like an internal alarm system we've had for ages.
Millions of years, yeah. It's primal.
And the crucial insight here, from your notes, is that this part of the brain, the amygdala, it doesn't really calm down through logic or rational understanding.
Right. It doesn't care much about what you think you know.
So telling yourself it's just anxiety doesn't flip the switch off.
Often no, because the amygdala learns primarily through direct experience and through action, not just by getting information or thinking thoughts. It learns by what you do, how you respond.
Ah, okay. Action, not logic. That explains a lot. That's why sometimes, even when you know intellectually, okay, this is just anxiety, it doesn't make the physical discomfort, that feeling of dread, just vanish.
Exactly. Your rational mind gets it, maybe. Yeah. But your body's alarm system hasn't gotten the updated memo through actual, tangible, real-world experience yet.
You've really hit on the critical point there. Every single time you feel a sensation, you decide it's dangerous, and then you react in fear. Whether that reaction is trying desperately to calm down or checking your pulse again or seeking reassurance from someone or just avoiding the situation entirely.
All those safety behaviors?
Yeah, you're giving your amygdala this really clear, consistent message. Danger. This feeling is definitely a threat to our safety.
It underlines that big difference between knowing something just in your head, like reading about anxiety.
Right.
And your brain actually learning it experientially through what you do, through your actions.
Yeah.
Which naturally raises a huge question for us, doesn't it? If our reactions, even the ones meant to help, are accidentally teaching our brain that our own sensations are threats.
Then what happens if we change those reactions?
Exactly. What if we change the input? Because continuing to check pulses constantly, trying to force yourself to breathe correctly, endlessly seeking reassurance, avoiding triggers, all those actions effectively scream emergency to your nervous system.
And that just keeps the fear alive, keeps the cycle going.
Precisely. It reinforces the very fear we ultimately want to move past.
Wow. Okay, so it feels like we're kind of caught in this loop where trying to feel safer actually makes us feel less safe in the long run. So, if the amygdala learns through action, not just thoughts, what kind of action does it need? How do we give it that new experience, that corrective message that says, hey, we're actually okay?
Exactly. That's the million-dollar question, right? And the breakthrough, according to this material, comes from understanding that the brain genuinely needs concrete evidence, real, tangible proof that these sensations aren't actually dangerous.
Proof through action.
Proof through action. Your material poses this really powerful question. What happens when you don't react? When you just allow the sensations to be there without trying to fix them, without fighting them?
Just let them be while still living.
Yes. When you continue living your life, even with moments of discomfort, when you start doing that consistently, something really remarkable starts to shift. Deep down.
What happens?
Your brain actually begins to question its own alarm system. It starts thinking, hang on, if this sensation was really so dangerous, wouldn't we be doing something drastic about it? Wouldn't we be in full-blown panic mode right now?
Ah, so the lack of panicked reaction becomes the new evidence?
Exactly. This process, creating new neural pathways that start to override the old ingrained fear response by teaching the brain that a feared stimulus isn't actually dangerous. This is what neuroscientists call inhibitory learning.
Inhibitory learning.
It's about building new evidence, new learning that inhibits or overrides the old fear. It's not about trying to erase the original feeling completely, but about teaching the brain it doesn't require that panicked reaction.
That idea, inhibitory learning, feels, well, really transformative. It means we're essentially reprogramming our brain's alarm system through our behavior, through our choices.
That's a great way to put it. Reprogramming through behavior.
For the person whose experiences are shared in your material, this meant taking some pretty big steps, right? Like eating even when feeling really nauseous.
Yes, that was a key example. Not waiting until the nausea passed.
But actually putting food in their mouth while feeling terrible, that sounds incredibly hard.
Oh, undoubtedly uncomfortable. But profoundly corrective, as you said. Each bite, each moment of choosing not to react with panic or escape in the face of that discomfort, sent their nervous system a new, clear message.
What message was that?
Hey, we can feel this way. We can experience this intense discomfort, and it can still be okay. We are actually still safe.
And this same principle, this idea of inhibitory learning through action, it applies to so many other situations too, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Like continuing to walk even if your heart is racing and feels alarming.
Mm-hmm. Or driving even if you feel a bit dizzy or disconnected.
Or trying to work through that brain fog instead of just stopping everything until it lifts.
Exactly. It's about continuing to function, continuing to engage with life without making the primary goal fixing or eliminating the feeling right now.
Okay. So every time you choose to do that, you're sending that new corrective message to your nervous system.
You are. You're proving to it through your actions again and again. Look, we can be in this state of discomfort and we can still live safely. We can still do things.
You're teaching your body a new reality. That's the core of it.
Precisely. It's about providing new real-world data to a part of the brain that learns best through direct experience. Think about it. When your system is in fight or flight, it's sending an emergency signal every lull. If you then resist that signal, try to fight it back or desperately try to make it go away right now.
You're confirming the emergency.
You're inadvertently feeding that emergency signal even more energy. That resistance, that fight, is exactly what keeps the fight or flight system fully switched on.
And that prevents healing.
It prevents your body from naturally shifting back into a state of rest, digest, and repair. Your body simply cannot begin to properly heal and re-regulate when it constantly believes it needs to protect itself from some imminent threat.
So the biggest shift, the most impactful thing you can do,
is to stop chasing that immediate relief from symptoms, stop trying to make them vanish instantly, and instead start deliberately, diligently practicing neutrality towards those sensations.
Practicing neutrality. Okay. It sounds simple, but what does that actually look like? In the real world, it's easy to say don't react, right? But when you're in the middle of intense anxiety, it must take immense courage not to try and fix it immediately.
It does. It takes real courage and practice. It's definitely not easy, especially at first.
So what kind of practical steps can someone take when it feels so hard?
That's a really vital question. Practicing neutrality means consciously, intentionally, allowing the sensations, the racing heart, the dizziness, the nausea, whatever it is, to just be there.
Without judgment.
Without judgment, without resistance. While you continue to live your life, continue to engage in your chosen activities as best you can, you are, through your actions, non-verbally telling your brain, see, this sensation isn't a threat anymore. It's just a sensation, and I am safe.
So it's the action despite the feeling.
Yes. Your amygdala, that ancient fear center, it doesn't calm down because you logically understand a concept from a book or this conversation. It calms down when it consistently sees over and over again through your lived experience that the very thing it's been afraid of doesn't actually require that big panicked response from you.
And that consistent non-reaction, that's the beginning of desensitization.
That is the powerful beginning of desensitization. Exactly. Your material has that really powerful conclusion that resonates here. When you stop making your sensations the enemy, when you give up that internal fight,
your body finally gets permission to stop sounding the alarm.
Exactly. Your body finally has the essential permission it needs to stand down, to stop sounding that constant alarm. And that is truly where deep, lasting recovery begins. By genuinely showing your nervous system through what you do that there is actually nothing to fear right now.
So today we've taken this deep dive into the insights from the material you shared.
Uh-huh.
And it really explores such a powerful, maybe even radical idea for some, that our ingrained reactions to anxiety symptoms, our attempts to fight or flee them, might actually be what's inadvertently keeping them alive.
It flips the script a bit, doesn't it?
It really does. We've seen how a fundamental shift in how we respond, not just what we think, can completely change our relationship with anxiety. We looked at that core fear and proof cycle, understood how our amygdala learns through direct experience and action, not just logic.
Crucial point.
And uncovered the really transformative power of what you called inhibitory learning and this practice of neutrality.
Yes, allowing, not fighting.
This whole deep dive, it seems to show us that true healing isn't always about making the symptoms disappear right now. Maybe that's not even the main goal initially.
Right, the focus shifts.
Instead, it's about changing the underlying message your brain is receiving, teaching it through your courageous actions again and again that you are fundamentally safe, even when you're experiencing discomfort.
Absolutely. And it's just so important to remember as you go through this that healing is often happening profoundly underneath the surface. Even when things still feel messy or uncomfortable on the outside, progress isn't always linear.
That's a really encouraging thought.
It is a journey, definitely. And taking these initial brave steps, well, it isn't always easy to do alone, is it? Which is why guidance, maybe from a therapist or a trusted resource, and just continued learning are so incredibly important along this path.
Support makes a difference.
Immense difference. But taking that first step of just gaining this deeper understanding, like we've talked about today, and then making that commitment to start teaching your brain a new story through your actions, that is a truly courageous move toward genuine freedom.
It really is.
So maybe we can leave you with this to think about. Consider what one small action, just one, you could realistically take today, or maybe tomorrow, even while experiencing some discomfort. One small action to start showing your nervous system with real clarity that you are actually safe.
Just one small thing.
What one thing could you choose to do differently, even in a tiny way, to start giving your brain that new, undeniable evidence of your safety? Because exploring this path really shows that profound freedom from anxiety isn't just some far-off dream. It's a real possibility built through consistent, corrective action.